welcome back to another episode of Exposing Ourselves. I'm Travis Ritchie, and this is episode 77. This is the show where we expose each other to new things. Matt, a big music fan, will assign me one of his favorite music artists to listen to each week, and I, a movie buff, will give him one of my favorite films, and we come together on this very podcast to discuss it all. And with me, as always, is my very good friend,
Matt Rundquist. Hey, Travis. This week, I watched the movie Birdman, and you listened to the pop band Foster the People.
How was your week, my friend?
It was a good week. This was Matt Goes to Shows week. This is the week that I've been talking about for a little while, where a bunch of concerts hit the town, and I wanted to go to them all, and I was like, oh man, this is going to be expensive and I'm going to be so tired. But honestly, it was a real joy to just sort of dedicate myself to going to live music. I love live music, as you know. There's a lot of music that I like live that I kind of so-so on in recording. I just like the energy that's in the room and, you know, dancing, moving my body, being around people, all of those things. So live music is where it's at for me. So just for the record, the four concerts were King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard, Bongzilla, Stoner Rock, Wisconsinites actually, Bongzilla, the local band Rat Bath, along with Noun from Screaming, which has the guitarist from Screaming Females, and last night was Russian Circles. So all bands that I really, really love. I think the only one of those I've given to you is Screaming Females, which she plays the same kind of music now, just in a different band. But yeah, I really, really, really had a great week. I bought a bunch of t-shirts. I have like six band t-shirts now, spending money that I probably shouldn't have spent on band t-shirts because I have so many t-shirts. But you know what? Life is short.
Yeah, it's a good way to support them too.
Yeah, when it comes to touring artists right now, merch is really where it's at in terms of supporting the artists, especially with all the Live Nation, Ticketmaster, Monopoly stuff going on. They really don't make a ton of money off of ticket sales. It's really where the merch is at. And for smaller artists, a lot of them pay money to tour, lose money on touring. So if you're at a smaller venue supporting independent artists, absolutely buy some kind of merch, a sticker, a CD. Even if you don't have a way of playing a CD, really what you're doing is you're giving them $10.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, for sure. Help them out a little bit. Yeah. I like that. I almost bought a t-shirt this week too, but I'll tell you about it when I tell you about my week.
When it's your turn, yeah. The other big deal that happened this week is that my dog Pepper turned 5 years old, and this is the dog that we fostered for 3 months, and she didn't have a single adoption appointment, and finally she had wormed her way into our hearts, and so we kept her, and now 2.5 years later, she's 5 years old, and her behavior is, I want to say, 6% better than it was when we were fostering her. Really not much better at all. But she is adorably cute. And that goes a really long way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Plus, she's poorly behaved for a greyhound. She's not, like, poorly behaved for a dog. Right?
Uh-huh.
It's just greyhounds are generally so, like, chill and relaxed and easy that you get used to them. You know, it's like if a couple has a baby and the first baby is, like, quiet and easy to entertain and sort of takes care of itself, and then they have a child that's like a holy terror, the second child might not actually be that bad. But compared to the first baby, it's a monster.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, the first baby sets a bar, and then it's sometimes hard to meet up with that. And I know that with dogs, too. So Dot, who you've met before, set the bar pretty high for dogs for me.
Yeah.
And Coco, who is wonderful.
Who is wonderful.
Doesn't always meet that bar.
Yeah, well, again, that's a really high bar to meet. Dot was one of the best dogs I've ever met, so...
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. Happy birthday to Pepper.
Yeah. Hey, Travis, how was your week?
My week was A lot. There was a ton this week. So I mentioned that I was going to go on Labor Day down to the Nude Beach, which is a Black's Beach in San Diego. And I did that. And that was a wonderful trip. It was so much fun just walking along and playing frisbee on the beach and doing it's Black's is a really interesting beach. It's got these high sand bluffs that are just like cliffs that you have to climb down. And there's a path, but it's a little precarious. Someone actually fell and died the day we were there. Yeah, it was right. And then
I like nude beaches, but not that much.
Right. Well, you know, I mean, you should be careful a little bit. But then I went and the part of the beach that we were on is very flat. And so you can actually walk out into the water and it's not quite like Bahamas flat, but you can get further out into the water and still just kind of be in a few inches of water, and which makes the beach really great for things like playing, you know, football or frisbee or whatever. Mm, so
sure.
And so that was a lot of fun. I had a one interesting thing career-wise that happened to me is that I had two separate friends message me about this audition that they had seen for this Samsung commercial that they were looking for former Apple Store employees that were no longer Apple Store employees. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's me. And so I reached out to my agent and was like, hey, can you submit me for this? And the response I got was, oh, we don't do commercials. And the commercial person that we had at our old agency didn't come over to this new agency with us, so you're not repped commercially anymore. And I was like, ooh, well, I wish I would have known that. I mean, not that commercials are a huge part of my career, never have been, but it'd be nice to know that I didn't have a commercial agent.
Yeah, and before so you ask, yeah.
They ended up giving me over to the commercial agent that is at this new agency, and they submitted me, and I auditioned. And then as I was flying to Toronto on Friday for the Toronto International Film Festival, I got a call during one of my layovers from the agent saying I was on hold for that commercial. So that's,
nice.
I guess, means that it's – I'm never really super clear what that means. It's I haven't been cast yet, but it's like –
So you're saying you're not clear what it means. Do they give you like a little bit of money to just be like,
no
it's just like, clear your schedule. We might need you. We might not.
Exactly. So they want to make sure that your schedule is clear for the days that they're shooting and that you, there might be something technical about if you book another thing, they have the right to grab you first,
sure,
type of thing. I'm not actually 100% on that.
I'll bet your agent knows.
Hmm?
Your new commercial agent, I'll bet they know.
Probably they do. And I don't even know if they are my new commercial agent or if it was just one of these one-time things.
Huh.
We'll see. I mean, I'm sure they would be if I actually booked this. And then they're like, oh, well, Travis is a booking actor.
So you went to the Toronto International Film Festival, eh?
Yes, indeed. And it was a kind of a fun experience. It was a very, very short trip. I was only there for 2 days. I flew in on Friday, flew back on Sunday. The main reason that I went was to go to the launch party for this new company that I'm part of. And that was a fun party. And then meeting a bunch of the other people at that company for the first time in real life was fun. So we hung out and, you know, made friends. I went on a date while I was there. It was just a fun kind of thing. I saw a movie.
and you saw a movie at a film festival?
Well, I didn't know if I would have time because A, I didn't have a pass. It was my going was so late that I didn't have a room of my own. I ended up having to crash on my boss's room, you know, pull out bed in his hotel room, and I also didn't have tickets to things, and so at one point I just used his pass to get into a screening. That
nice.
Yeah, and it was not good. I was a bit shocked at this movie and why it was at this festival, what this big, huge, like important festival. So but Toronto was fantastic. I don't know if you've ever been, but
it's a great city. My dad's second marriage was in it was in Niagara Falls, but then the reception and dinner were in Toronto, and so, and then I went there for work once. I went to a Blue Jays game in their weird little golf ball stadium. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it was a weird little stadium. I think I walked past it, and I was like, is that a whole stadium in there?
It's the very first stadium to have a retractable roof, and it is a very unusual design that has never been used since.
Oh, interesting. Okay, well, that explains that. So the other big news is that we are currently at the tail end of a massive heat wave. So you're listening, and you've either been in it because you're in LA, or you've heard about it, and because people are dropping like flies. And I've been in two power outages because of it. One at my acting studio on Thursday night, and then I came home and it was 103 degrees in my kitchen, because we generally don't cool the whole apartment. We just cool air conditioning in the bedrooms. And our kitchen was 103 degrees, which was
insane.
That
is very hot for indoors.
Yeah. So, but luckily the bedrooms are fine. Coco is fine. And we actually turned on the air conditioner in the living room, even though it's going to cost more to run it. But we just decided that it would be safer to have the whole place be a little cool. But it was nice to escape a little bit of that to go up to Toronto, which was, in my opinion, a bit chilly. So, but I'm glad to be back.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, that's
so,
cool.
Yeah, a busy week, and I'm glad to be through it. It's going to be a busy couple of months coming up, so I am going to be chasing my own tail a little bit, I think. So
awesome. Well, what do you say we get into the meat of this episode,
let's
then?
Get right to the meat, and how about we shake things up and do the movie first?
Let's do it. Travis, tell me about the movie that I watched, Birdman.
Birdman. Yeah, Birdman, or the full title.
That was so good.
That was good. That's good. I didn't catch it at all. I've done that before with you. In fact, just last week with the Blur or
Blur or
whatever
Pulp.
Pulp was the actual name of the band we listened to. Anyway, Birdman, it's one of these stylized titles, Birdman, or The Unexpected Virtue of Ignorance. It was a 2014 American dark comedy drama film. It was directed by Alejandro González Iñárritu and starred Michael Keaton as this washed-up Hollywood actor who was best known to that point for playing a superhero named Birdman. So very meta-ish, given that Michael Keaton was at that point kind of best known for playing Batman. And so this follows his struggles because he's trying to make a comeback by writing and directing and starring in a Broadway play. And this movie is known for a bunch of things. It's got a massive supporting cast, including Edward Norton, Zach Galifianakis, Andrea Riseborough, Amy Adams, Emma Stone, Naomi Watts are all in there. And it is also notable for being presented as one shot, one continuous shot.
Sort of.
It's clear that it's not, because there are a bunch of ways in which we move
there's
through
blackouts
time.
And there's... there are time jumps.
Yes.
Right.
So it's not it's not asking us to believe that it's actually one shot, not like 1917 kind of did.
Yeah.
But it is, that's the vibe, right? It's trying to put on this one shot feel, right? So, and it's interesting. It's interesting how it does it. This movie is, without credits, about 103 minutes long, and I loved about 102 minutes and 55 seconds of it, and I want to talk about that stuff before we talk about the last 5 seconds, which to me do irreparable harm to this movie, and is probably the reason I haven't assigned it to you until now.
Wow.
And, yeah.
Wow.
So we'll talk about that. But until then, Matt, what did you think of Birdman?
It's interesting. It was not the movie that I thought it was, because there are so many, you know, I mean, obviously it was an Oscar-winning film, multiple Oscar-winning film. It was very big in the zeitgeist for a while. And so I had heard sort of descriptions of it. I'd seen a few shots from it. And I thought this was going to not be so tightly focused on the New York theater, right? Mm. This is a movie about a man trying to make a play. We talk mm-hmm. about this movie, or when people talk about this movie, they say, oh, it's about this washed up actor who's trying to get his career going again, right? But this movie is about a play, and it heavily features the writer, director, actor, and it's like about him, but it's really also about the production of this play, not maybe the play itself, because you never really get an exact handle on what the play is. But like, there's so much stuff that's backstage or on the roof of the theater or going in and out of the theater. Most of the other actors in this movie are other actors that are in the play or are directing or producing the play or are in some way attached to it, which is to say Emma Stone, who is acting as her father's assistant and then consequently is sort of the play's assistant. And that was all surprising to me. I thought this movie was going to have a wider lens, right? Mm. It's very focused, you know? Mm-hmm. Which I think it's great that it's an hour and 40 minutes. Like, I always nick movies for being longer than they have to be. This movie, I think, is the right length to tell the story. And I love that about it. There's a lot of really good performances here. I don't know that I want to single anybody out. I don't think. I mean, other than Michael Keaton, who really does kind of carry this movie, I thought he was going to carry it with the weight of his personal history. But I feel like that fades into the background very quickly here. I don't feel when I was watching this movie that I was watching Michael Keaton, washed up actor, trying to resurrect his career by acting in an indie film, you know, which I think is the story that people have about it in their heads. But like, that doesn't...
I don't know. But I think it kind of was. Like, where was Michael Keaton? Like, he's back now. He's back in a strong way after doing this and then Spider-Man and then he did some Avengers.
Well, no, that was part of Spider-Man. He's in the new Beetlejuice movie, right?
Well, and he's in the new Beetlejuice movie. But, like, I think for a while, Michael Keaton wasn't really around until this movie came back.
I understand that. I'm not saying that he was necessarily super popular. I'm just saying that to the extent that I thought this movie leaned really heavily on that aspect of his personal history, I don't think that that's necessary to understand and appreciate this movie. And I feel like maybe it's even doing it a little bit of a disservice. I think this is a really good movie independent of all that, you know?
I see what you're saying.
And I don't, you know, I don't think Michael Keaton was ever washed up either, right? Like, it's not like he had acted in a ton of, like, straight-to-video dreck, right?
He's no Rutger Hauer. In the same way that, like, Steven Seagal or Rutger Hauer, yeah.
Yeah. He just wasn't in the limelight anymore, which is true of a lot of actors in their 50s and early 60s, you know? So, anyways, I guess that was all surprising to me. Because there's this narrative about this movie, and I didn't really, like, that wasn't what I latched onto. I thought there was a really nice pace to this movie. There's, even though it is, like, all revolving around the theater, it doesn't feel like, there they are reaching into that same bag of tricks again, like, multiple times in the movie. There's different stories going on that are interwoven really well. It's not just Michael Keaton's story at all. There's this whole thing with Ed Norton and his wife, who is also in the movie. Also in the play, and she is trying to break through onto Broadway, and this is going to be her big debut. And he's a much bigger actor than her, and there's a lot of really great stuff revolving around that relationship, because a lot of creative people are in relationships that are unbalanced in terms of success, right? Mm-hmm. For every Goldie Hawn and Kurt Russell, there's a lot of relationships that are just like very, very successful person and slightly less successful person, which can feel like a gulf to cross. And so I thought that stuff was all handled really super well. I liked this movie. It does have a lot of magical realist elements, which we should get into a little bit. And the one thing that I will say about that stuff is it's not clear, right? And I think this tries to be one of those movies that's like, oh, that's the question. Is it real what he's experiencing? Is it not real what he's experiencing? And I don't love that. I would like an answer, please.
Me too.
I would at the very least like to know that you know the answer.
Right.
You know? And
I feel like we've talked about this kind of thing
before.
We
have talked about this thing, but you've often come down on the other side of this from me, that you're willing to justify stuff or say that there's an answer that I don't believe exists. But this movie
firmly of the opinion that the filmmakers should know the answer, right?
Yeah.
And I don't want the deciphering of the story to be on me in order to enjoy it, you know?
Yeah.
And I think this movie has a fatal flaw and into that last 5 seconds, because I feel like they very strongly here's the thing. So for people who haven't watched it yet, there's this through line that Michael Keaton's character actually has telekinetic powers, whether they're the same as his Birdman character that he played in the movies or not, we don't really know. But he is seen on camera moving things with his mind and controlling
things. And flying.
The first shot that you see of him, he's floating as he's meditating. And so you are given to believe that he has these powers. Later on, as you go through the movie, it becomes clear that that isn't the case, that it is all in his head, and that he is kind of like having this kind of psychotic break. There's this whole flying sequence where he is flying through the air, and he arrives at a location and walks into the building, and the cab driver who drove him there in reality chases him in, says, hey, you need to pay your bill. And so we're like, oh, okay, he's thinking he flew there, but he actually took a cab, and he's crazy. I'd be fine with that. That's a really strong story. I like it, and it seems clear. But then the last 5 seconds happens, and he jumps out of a window, and his daughter runs to the window and looks down for the body and is confused that there's no body there, but then she looks up in the air and smiles.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of that?
I agree with you that it is at the very least muddled. But I think you're right that it's a betrayal of the movie that has gone before.
Is there a way, do you think? Now, you're right. I do tend to look for ways to justify or explain things away. But is there a way to interpret that moment as something other than what we were shown?
Well, I mean, I think you could interpret as she looks down, she's confused because why would he commit suicide so soon after surviving an accidental
shooting? A suicide attempt?
Right. And he's come out the other side with all sorts of plaudits and accolades, and he dies. But then she looks up and she realizes that she's going to inherit his fortune and she's happy. That's my only explanation.
The other thing I was thinking of is perhaps we are not seeing.
You no-sold that joke so hard.
I what?
Sorry, it's a wrestling term, which means that you didn't find my joke funny, and so you basically ignored its existence. Yeah.
The
joke that she was just excited because she was going to inherit his money.
Well, that's a reasonable thing to say. I didn't think it was a joke. I thought you were...
Oh, gosh. No, that's awful. I would never think that of Emma Stone or her character.
But it's a reasonable interpretation of... Even though, like, we're grasping at straws here. We're looking at ways to explain that moment, and that's what I was asking for.
Yeah, and I would
for,
never...
I thought,
that's
what you're doing.
That's a crazy explanation. But anyways, you were going to say.
Well, then you just wasted a whole minute of people's time. The only thing I could think of is that that moment wasn't her... In real life, it was him as he was falling, imagining her coming in.
Sure, but there's no evidence for that at all.
No, No.
Yeah.
That's very unclear. And yeah, the only thing I could think of is if they would have started the camera down with him and then come up to find her. I don't know. It was very strange. I didn't like it. And I think when I saw that originally, that's what ruined this movie for me. Endings are so important. You know, first impressions and last impressions are the two of the most important things about how people see a movie and or anything.
Yeah. No, I mean,
that's what we remember.
I think of The Mist, right? And, you know, I think your tolerance, one's tolerance for that ending is really important as to whether or not you like the movie The Mist.
Yeah, yeah. And certainly it wasn't more than I genuinely liked that ending.
Which is funny because you talk so much about not liking bleak endings. And that one is unequivocally the bleakest ending to a movie I've ever seen.
But it's not. There's a difference between nihilism and bleak, to me, and tragedy, right? And to me, that's a tragic ending, not a nihilistic ending. You know,
well,
Cormac McCarthy's The Road is nihilistic to me.
Yeah.
The Gray, starring Liam Neeson, or Wolf Puncher, is nihilistic. You know,
that was just bleak. Anyways, back to Birdman.
Birdman.
Yeah, Edward Norton plays a jerk well enough that I don't think I'd like to meet him in real life.
He has a reputation, I think. But I think he did great in this movie. Yeah, kind of.
He did a very good job, but like his character is written as a real stain on humanity.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Well, there is a reason supposedly that he wasn't brought back to play Hulk in The Avengers, even though he played the Hulk in The Incredible Hulk.
Ed Norton played The Incredible Hulk?
Oh, yeah. He was so there were
wow,
two
that's
Incredible
a real,
Hulk movies.
That's a real casting choice right there.
Why? What do you mean?
I don't know. It just feels very out of left field to me. I mean, I guess Bruce Banner is supposed to be mild-mannered, but wow.
Right. He's mild-mannered. He's a scientist, right? And so, Edward Norton has this kind
Have
of, like,
Have you seen American History X, by the way? Not to get totally off topic.
Oh, yeah.
Topic? Okay.
I think – I really like a lot of Edward Norton's performances. I think he's I think he's a pretty great actor.
No, but he's a very good actor. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like I said, this is a very good performance. He's just playing a jerk well enough that I don't like him now.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if he got a Oscar nom for this. A lot of Oscar nominations came out of this, by the way. Not only did it win for Best Picture, Best Director, Best Original Screenplay, and Best Cinematographer, but it had 9 total nominations, including...
Michael Keaton? Michael Keaton.
Yeah, Michael Keaton and Emma Stone both got nominated. I said last week that I thought Emma Stone won because she's won so many times that I thought this was one of them, but it wasn't. I think she just got nominated. And I don't know if Norton got a Best Supporting nomination for it. I don't know. I probably could. I probably should.
Oh, my gosh. Emma Stone has won Best Actor, Actress, or Supporting Actress 4 times.
Is it 4? I thought it was 3, but yeah, she is.
No, best she is a actress 2015 and 20 or sorry best supporting 2015 and 2019, best actress 2017 and 2024. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's the Meryl Streep of our generation.
Yeah. Right? She is becoming one of the winningest actors around. So, there is a lot to love about this movie. I love the camera work. I love the choreography of the camera work is very impressive because you do need to show the audience very specific things. And if you're not shooting coverage to get those specific things, you need to choreograph it ahead of time, which reflects the playness, right? The stage playness of the plot.
Yeah.
In the camera work. And they use this huge theater, and I don't know if it's a real place or if it was a set that was built. It feels like it's a real theater that they shot in.
Yes, and it's got to be. I don't think that's built.
Yeah, and they show so much. They explore so much of that space. It's really, really beautiful. So, that shows all of that care and all of that love and all of that. I really did like so much of this movie. Mm-hmm. I just was left with a bad taste in my mouth at that last shot. And
well, I'll tell you, I just looked it up. It was filmed at the St. James Theater. They had mm-hmm. 2 weeks to film the interiors.
Wow.
So, I mean, as you know, successful Broadway shows rake in money, right? So to get a Broadway theater for filming, I would imagine, is a real big lift, you know?
Yeah.
It's likely that most even reasonably successful shows are going to be making more money than a movie production is going to want to spend just on location. So
sure, that makes sense. And it is interesting too, because, well, I would imagine that a lot of shows have rehearsal time and build time and stuff like that. So
yeah,
so
but you can't be in there building a movie set if you're building a play set.
That's true. And some of these shots were not just Steadicam handheld shots. They were on rigs, mm-hmm. Up in the rafters, down, from the rafters to the floor, and then across the wall. And it was not one shot, so they would have had to have set up. Have all these different setups in order to splice these shots together. So, ooh, that's impressive. 2 weeks?
Yeah.
Very impressive.
Yeah, I don't know if it's certainly possible that they built, like, the interior of the theater performance space on a soundstage. I'd believe that. But, like, all those dressing rooms and those hallways, that's mm-hmm. all real. It's got to be. That claustrophobic backstage area, which I loved getting to see that stuff, because that's mm-hmm. real for any of you who have never performed in a play at a real old theater. Like, tiny hallways, they're just an ADA nightmare, the Americans with Disabilities Act nightmare. There's stairs everywhere. There's no handrails in lots of places. But it's really cool. And it was neat to get to see that stuff. Anyways, I liked this movie a lot. I agree with you about the ending. I have the distinct feeling that we're going to end up very similar on this one.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, it's going to be a high rating for me, but definitely that ending does affect it for me in a bad way. Sure. I don't know if I have a whole lot of things to say, and apologies for if this ends up being a short episode, but it is 105 degrees right now, and I have to turn off my air conditioning for podcast recording, and the temperature is climbing. If you can see this video, you can see me breaking out in a sweat.
What do you say I rate this, Travis?
Yeah, give me a rating. What do you have?
I think this is going to be an 8 for me. I liked it a lot. It doesn't quite... I think this would probably be a 10 without that ending. So maybe this should be a 9. Is this a 9? Nah, I didn't... This movie didn't make me smile a ton.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna give it an 8.
Yep, I'm right there with you.
Yeah.
An 8, I think. I don't know that it would be a 10 with the other end. I think it feels like a 9 movie.
Yeah.
With a better ending, with a more concrete ending at least, and then the ending that we got brings it down to an 8, I think. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Cool.
Cool. Awesome. Well, Matt, let's move on and tell me about Up With People.
Nope.
Oh, okay, great. Good night, everybody. How do people reach out to us if they want to make suggestions?
Travis, the band is called Foster the People. Up With People is a 1970s. It's like I think people were on drugs at the time. Yeah, no,
Foster the People. Okay, wait. Didn't Up With People sing at the Super Bowl like 10 times or something like that?
I have that might have been the early thing. Yeah, Up With People was it was formed in 1968. It's such a hippie thing, Up With People. I love that that was where your brain went, though.
Is that not what I listen to? Okay.
Yeah.
I definitely need to change the name of this file. Okay, go ahead. Tell me about Foster the People, then.
I don't have a ton to tell you about Foster the People, which is good because we're doing a short episode. This is a pop band that early on in their career, they had a massive, massive hit with a song about the Columbine shooting called Pumped Up Kicks. It is... Wow. a lovely, upbeat, cool song that is definitely about a school shooting and very, very popular. I'm sure it's got hundreds of millions of views on YouTube. But they've continued. That was like 10, 15 years ago, something like that. But they've continued making music. And they came out with an album this year, just a couple of months ago. And I really, really like it. I've listened to it a bunch in the last 2 months. And I gave it to you. It's called A Paradise State of Mind. It starts out with like a real funk vibe. And then it goes into a few other genres. And I thought, man, I've never given Travis really any kind of funk music. And this is white people funk. Like, let's not confuse anyone. This is not George Clinton funk. But it actually, I don't know, in the 90s, did you ever listen to the band Jamiroquai?
I've heard of Jamiroquai. I couldn't possibly tell you what they
This has
came
a
out with.
Real Jamiroquai light feel to me. Full on Jamiroquai is a little too much for me, but this just bringing in those dance elements, the funky bass lines, I really dig it. Travis, what'd you think of Paradise State of Mind?
Interesting. So this was a weird album for me to listen to, and okay. I had two very distinct comparisons that popped into my brain as I was listening to this. So the first time I listened to it was on the way down to the beach last Monday.
Okay.
And I was picking up, especially the beginning of the album, big Prince vibes.
Like sure.
Early Prince, like,
yeah,
you know, experimental,
yeah, funky,
type stuff
dancey.
Vibe.
Yeah.
Yeah, funky, dancey vibes. And then there's something that happens about halfway through the album, and I don't know if it's like in the song Glitchzig, but
yes.
The song Glitchzig actually has a glitch in it,
uh-huh.
Or it sounds like it's glitching,
uh-huh.
And then completely shifts to a different kind of music.
Yeah.
And yeah. I didn't like it, first of all. I didn't
the
like that
The style
shift.
Of music or the song Glitchzig?
The end of the song,
okay.
Right? That,
yeah.
that what it glitches to mm-hmm. was unpleasant for me because it continues to be glitchy and like tonally mm-hmm. weird and
yeah, it's a little
like
noisy. It's a little weird. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then the last half of the album. Do you know who Bill Wirtz is?
It rings a bell, but I don't know.
He's a YouTuber, and I don't know if he's only a YouTuber, but I know him from YouTube, and I know him specifically from these kind of weird videos. One of them is he does this, the history of the universe, I guess. That's the name of this of the video, and he will sometimes intersperse these little snippets of music into his videos, and sometimes he'll do a whole short song. A minute long or whatever, that's this story kind of electronic sounding thing. And Foster the People sounded very much like that at the end. So those were the comparisons I made. Did I like it? I liked it for the most part, but it had a very narrow range of application for me. I went in the car. I found that we were suddenly not listening to the music. Like if the first couple songs, we were, my driving partner and I were like, "Hey, let's listen to this," because he also listens to the podcast and
oh,
likes
okay.
it. So I was like, "Hey, let's listen to this week's music together." And after the first couple songs, we just started talking over the music, and
okay.
it was very good music to talk over. You know, like it was very good music to have turned down. On in the background as
yeah.
you discuss.
So,
other
like
things.
When the conversation flags a little, you hear a little bop of music, and you're like, "Oh yeah, that's nice,"
yep.
and then you continue your conversation.
Exactly, it was great conversation filler music. The other time I listened to it was when I was kind of walking around on my flights, actually, like walking around the airports, going from one flight to another, waiting to deplane. Also good, like, I have to concentrate on looking at signs and figuring out where I'm going, but I've also got this kind of playing in the background. I don't think I would have liked it on a hike.
Sure, where you had to focus on it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it's got kind of a good rhythm and kind of a good beat.
It's a little bit soundtrack music, isn't it? Yeah.
A little bit.
It's like going along and it's doing its thing. Maybe even like video game soundtrack where you don't want to, you know, on a video game, right? You want something that will be like engaging for people, but not to take them away from the story. And not to annoy them into, like, turning off the music.
Right. Right. This is very non-diegetic music.
Yeah.
Right. So, I don't know. I liked it. It was weird. You know, you flagged me for saying interesting many times a couple weeks ago.
I would agree with you, too. Especially, you're right, the second half of the album or the last third of the album is a little bit weirder, a little bit noisier. The thing about Foster the People is that they're like pop rock. And they do maybe rock out a little bit more on some of their earlier albums. But of course, you know, a song like Pumped Up Kicks is very poppy. It's very, I don't even know if there are any guitars in it, right? It's like all bass and drums and synthesizers, right? And vocals. You know, so there is something that's very, soundtracky about them. Just like, this is the music you listen to while you're doing something else that will get you through the quiet moments. And, you know, maybe the songs at the end of the soundtrack are like boss battles or just like, the underbelly of the town. Like, when you're up in the clouds, right, you get the funky, fun party music. And when you go down to street level where the dirty people live, that's when you get the sort of harsher, noisier stuff.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. No, I get that. And I didn't dislike anything except maybe the last half of that Glitch Zig song.
Okay.
But that's just because I don't really love discordance.
Sure.
And I think that was trying on purpose to be. It was trying on purpose to be glitchy sounding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
absolutely.
I just didn't love that. So it did what it meant to do. I just didn't like what it meant to do.
That's fair.
But the rest of the album was fine. I think I did completely two times through with little snippets here and there as I was trying to, you know, listen on my trip. And it was fine. I'm not sure how I'll rate it, but I don't know that I have a lot to say about it, other than like, if you know Prince, you know what this is going to sound like. Mm-hmm. And if you, I want everyone to go and look up Bill Wirtz and watch like one of his videos. I want to see if I can find one. Well, I don't know. It doesn't matter. But I'm thinking. Well, the couple of videos of his that I really love are, he does a history of the entire world, I guess, and then also he does history of Japan, and they're both really fun videos. But that's not. Those aren't the ones that I want you to watch. So I want you to watch like one of the songs. You know.
Okay.
So.
Well,
maybe I'll see if
I find it. The only thing I will say is that Foster the People is very, very popular. They have 3.3 million subscribers on YouTube Music, which I think just means they have 3.3 million subscribers on YouTube. The line is very blurry now between YouTube itself and YouTube Music. But they have like a lot of people follow this band. This is a big, big band. And, you know,
they really
true.
And Pumped Up Kicks has almost 2 billion plays.
Yeah, it's a very, very popular song. Yeah, very, very popular.
So. Which is interesting. So I actually did go back and listen to Pumped Up Kicks so that I could kind of refresh my memory on
context.
Yeah, and I didn't love it like I've remembered liking that
really?
Song before.
That's interesting. It didn't sing along with the chorus. All the other kids with the pumped up.
Yeah,
kicks.
And I don't know why. I feel like I imagined it being a little more upbeat, like a faster beat.
It's kind of a slow song. Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe that's. And again, I wasn't super familiar with it. I just kind of thought that that's what I remember. So.
Yeah. Well, Travis, what do you give this album? Mm-hmm. What do you think you're going to rate it?
That's interesting. I am going to give this a. I think this is going to be a 5 for me.
Really? Ooh,
straight
5?
Down the middle. Interesting. Because it really is just something that works in the background. If I were ever making a movie, I could see, you know, using some of these songs in the movie as like background songs. Mm-hmm. Maybe not even mood songs, but just like songs that characters are playing. So I guess that would be diegetic.
Oh, yeah.
Rather
yeah.
than. Yeah. So. How about you?
For me, this is another 8. I really dig this. It's actually a little rare for me to listen to a new release and have it stand out and be like something that I'm like, oh man, I gotta get this in front of Travis. Let's do it. So this one's an 8 for me.
Wait, this is that new?
Yeah, I think, like I said, it's only a couple of months old, I think.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. Okay, great. Huh. Awesome. Well, do you know what you have for me for next week?
I sure do. Do you... I started the sentence wrong. Have you heard of Laurel Sulfate and her Ladies of Leisure?
No, but I love it.
Yeah, it's a great name. It's actually a friend of mine here in Milwaukee who released an album. I think it's 2023, but it might be very early 2024. It is called The After Party. And I thought, man, I should give this to Travis. It is really, really good. It's like dance music, but not like club dance music, like movie body dance music.
Got it. So it's not EDM. It's something.
It's not EDM, no, but it is really good. A lot of really great lyrics on here, a lot of really great messages. The first song is called So Much Fun, and I really dig it. It is so much fun. Maybe the tempos might be a little slow for you. I'm not sure. But the exciting news for me is that I love this album. So even if you think it stinks, I'll still get to listen to it a few times this week.
Great. Great. That's a good enough reason. I like it. And hey, you know what? I don't care what you expose me to. I'm just happy to be exposed.
So that's a nude beach reference for any of you who that have been here since
it
the
is
beginning.
It is, and I've got I want to get down there again before the summer is out, because you know, you definitely want to go to the nude beach on a warm day.
That's a really good point. Thank you for that tip that I hadn't really thought about.
Definitely something to consider.
Travis, what do you have for me?
Yeah. Well, speaking of going to the beach on a warm day, I am going to revisit our missing items in the Pixar oeuvre and have you watch Luca, which was their movie from 2021 and also was, I believe, a direct-to-Disney+ release. And because it was still in the depths of the pandemic. And Luca is a interesting friends from different worlds story. So we've got the story of a young merboy, who wants to be part of the human world. And when they come out of the water, just like in Splash, they grow legs when they're dry. And then if they're wet, they have mermaid fins. And so it's using the Splash rules to tell a Fox and the Hound type story.
Okay.
So it's right? Mismatched friends who shouldn't be friends making a friendship out of it anyway. So I remember really liking it and really being touched. And I think that we have seen a lot of child and parent stories, and we've seen a lot of, just one person making it in the world that they don't belong. But I love a good friendship story, and I'm excited to revisit this. I haven't seen it since it was out in 2021, and I liked it, and I hope you do too.
Well, cool. I look forward to watching it probably after I watch Splash, which you just reminded me exists. And boy, I sure hope I watch it, and it's not like casually racist in a way that like ruins the experience for me.
Wait, have you ever not seen that? Splash?
What?
Have you not seen Splash?
No, I have seen Splash, but I was a child, viewing it through a child's lens. What I'm saying is it is very, you know, people of our generation are very familiar with the experience of watching a movie and really loving it when they're 8 years old, and then you watch it, 20, 30 years later and you're like, oh, wow, I really missed that whole, you know, racism thing.
Yes.
Or, you know, like the whole the whole oeuvre of John Hughes is a real minefield now, right? Whereas he used to be one of the most beloved directors of the 80s. And now you're like, there's a lot of stuff here that maybe shouldn't have made it onto the
Boy,
screen.
Boy, I don't know. I think Splash holds up. I feel like I've watched it fairly recently, like within the last maybe 5 years ago, and okay. I feel like it did okay. It's a Ron Howard movie, I think.
Is it
Ron
really?
Howard's
I
pretty,
didn't know that.
Yeah, I think it was one of his first directorial movies, if I'm not remembering that right.
I really wish that It's an Opie Joint had caught on.
Yeah, It's an Opie Joint. But you know what's funny is that Splash is the reason I had a long dislike of Eugene Levy. Or Levy.
Right. Sure.
Because he was the bad guy from Splash, and I saw it at a young enough age that I imprinted him being a bad guy.
Yeah. And now you're just terrified of anyone with majestic eyebrows. So.
Right, exactly. So, no, he's great now. After Schitt's Creek, he's back in my good graces. So,
Hey,
but
Travis,
if you want to watch Splash, go ahead.
If people want to get a hold of us, how should they do that?
I think they should email us at exposingourselvespodcast@gmail.com or check out our Facebook page, which is just Exposing Ourselves. And you can message us there, but also comment on our various things. And that's a good way to do it if you want to reach out and let us know if you agree or disagree with our ratings or give us suggestions for things. Matt told me before the podcast that he was having he might have been running out of artists to assign me. So he would love to hear your suggestions for things that I should be exposed to.
Yes, things that Travis might like. We don't know. Foster the People I thought was going to be a little bit more of a slam dunk, but it was only a 5, folks, so there's a lot of room for improvement there. Maybe you can do better than I can.
Yeah, I'm a mystery. Nobody knows the depths of my soul, so... And also, I would ask you guys, if you're still listening to this point, to just pull out your phones and go to the podcast page, scroll all the way to the bottom, and give us a rating. It really helps us. Leave a review, type a couple sentences, why you're listening to this podcast, what you like about it, how sexy our voices are, whatever you want. I don't know. I'm not trying to give you ideas, but you could do whatever you like, and we would appreciate that. All right. Hey, Matt, thank you for exposing yourself to me.
Well, thank you for exposing yourself to me.